fine crouton.
It's Word Salad with Amelia Discreet, only on 95BFM.
Oh, morena, Amelia, how are you?
Darling, I'm fabulous. I'm ready to talk about words today.
Oh my goodness,
it's
where
me,
are we
Vincent
going?
Vincent Price. No, sorry. Ever since I accidentally did that Vincent Price impression on the show,
yes.
When I, turns out, had COVID.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. You were like, oh, my voice is a bit cooked today. Luckily, you were at home, though, so we were all being very safe.
Oh, yes, it was all very safe. It was quite embarrassing for me, though, because there was a point where I did send a message to someone saying, being sick's actually all good. I'm leaning into it. And then I sent 5 minutes later, oh, no, it's actually COVID.
Which regret.
Lives eternally in screenshots now, so...
But,
awesome.
However, Vincent Price impersonation led you down a rabbit
yes,
hole.
Yes. I just thought, why haven't we talked about the mid-Atlantic or some say transatlantic accent before?
I was going to say we've had already, prior to the segment kicking off, a text from someone saying mid or transatlantic.
Yes. People...
It's a reckon, is it? Is there a bit of debate about that?
I mean, it's a bit of like a retronym, you know? It's something that we've imposed on this retrospectively.
Okay.
It's not what anyone who was coming up with it wanted to call it. It's like...
Isn't that always the way?
not necessarily. But should we get into the history of it a bit?
Let's get into the history. What are we even talking about here? We heard your beautiful impersonation of one, but what are we actually talking about?
So basically, this is the kind of like special made-up voice that people used to use in old films and news broadcasts. New Zealand kind of had its own version,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, you still hear some people on RNZ use.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just... It's essentially a kind of like non-English version of received pronunciation almost.
We were just talking about this before. I couldn't remember what RP stands for, but in my brain it always just is radio posh.
And it absolutely
it is
radio posh.
It's radio posh.
Posh,
but it is received pronunciation.
So basically the history with the mid-Atlantic, and this is a kind of an American version of this.
Okay.
So historically there have been some... anglicized versions of American accents, and they are usually associated with poshos.
Okay.
So they're from Ivy League universities, and people would call them things like Princeton Lockjaw.
Oh,
because you keep
gosh.
your bottom jaw very stiff when you speak like this.
Like Keira Knightley in Atonement.
Yeah, exactly. And so these were kind of an upper class accent.
Okay.
It was non-regional. It's like how posh people from Scotland don't sound like they're from Scotland.
Yeah, what is that
exactly,
all about?
That whole thing. It's like you don't want to sound like you're from
yes.
where you're from. You're upper class. You have your own way of correct speech.
Mm.
And then there's all kind of weird variants. Like there's a thing called Boston Brahmin that if you want to look up, you can hear people talking in a way that will make your ears explode. And they're kind
of... What a good name, Boston Brahmin.
It's...
Sounds like a cocktail.
It's fascinating. If I was better at describing phonemes, we could do a whole episode on it, but it's just awkward to explain. We'd just have to listen to some recordings of people talking funny. But basically, at the kind of the end of the 19th century, start of the 20th century, you get this Australian phonetician, is how he's credited here. Cool. His name's William Tilley, and he's like, oh, g'day, mate. Bloody throw another shrimp on the barbie. Let's codify a way of speaking right. And so he comes up with this thing called World English.
Ooh, it's like Esperanto for poshos.
That is exactly what I was going to say. It's like it's like Esperanto, and it's so... He basically lays down this way of speaking that is meant to be a kind of global accent to break down barriers.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting, but yes, I'm following.
Yeah, and so this... catches on. So he teaches at Columbia University, and one of his students ends up being this woman called...
scroll.
Sorry, I wanted to get her name right. I didn't want to just say Miss Skinner. Edith Warman Skinner.
Okay.
Who becomes a very popular voice coach in theatre and film in like the 1930s and 40s.
I was going to say my knowledge of that period is ropey. Like, I don't have a lot of knowledge, thanks to Katrina Longworth for most things I know about film from that era. But her name is one that does actually sound familiar. So she obviously had a level of notoriety to her.
She's a massively important figure.
Right.
In the history of talking. basically, in speaking English, she is very influential. So you have a kind of a few things happening at once. So this world English really gets taken up for as a kind of like an elevated speech, particularly on stage.
Okay.
And so it becomes kind of like the American equivalent of like Shakespearean English.
Okay, I'm following.
So yeah, we've all seen Shakespeare plays performed with this kind of ostentatious poshness that's not really like how an actual posh person talks, and yeah, it's not quite RP.
Yes.
It's its own kind of theatrical variant. Oh, I could talk for a long time about this. That's not at all what Shakespeare is meant to sound like.
We have to have our Shakespeare special. We still haven't had it, but we'll come back to that one.
We'll come back to that. Sounds way more like the Wurzels in its original performances. But anyway, so this is like the American equivalent. And so people are like, this play is important. This is no kitchen sink drama. It's not about like poor people specifically. It's theater. It's reaching for some kind of like grand ideal.
Culture.
And so on the stage, we shall all speak like this, darling.
I think we should play the clip you've brought us now, which is from the films, cinema.
Yes, so this is from a film called His Girl Friday, and this is Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell.
I'm getting married, Walter, and I'm also getting as far away from the newspaper business as I can get.
What?
I am through.
You get married all you want to, Hildy, but you can't quit the newspaper business.
Well, why not?
I know you, Hildy. I know what quitting would mean to you.
And what would it mean?
It would kill you.
You can't sell me that, Walter Byrne.
Who says I can't? You're a newspaper man.
That's why I'm quitting. I want to go someplace where I can be a woman.
Very good, very good film. So there's a few things that kind of happen to make this
accent
have the kind of cultural impact that it has. So
yeah.
So first of all, you get silent films are how films start, and then you get talkies, basically. And I think these days we take for granted that, like, well, films obviously were always going to have people talking in them, and it was kind of an accident that they didn't at first.
Yeah.
But no one who was making silent films was like, oh, if only I could have people talking.
Yeah,
they were like, this is what the format is. So when talkies came in, people were like, oh no, we have to fully reconstruct the way that this medium tells stories. I mean, that's what the film Singing in the Rain is about.
Yes.
If anyone has seen Singing in the Rain. but so that happens, and so they have to, you know, they have to structure films now around speech. And then you also get a few years after that this kind of like moral panic about Hollywood corrupting people. And so you have this new thing called the Hays Code come in that is like, films can't just be dirty jokes and long songs about heavy petting anymore.
Bugger.
They have to have these kind of certain moral things. And so you get, this is a screwball comedy, and that's kind of a direct result of that.
Yeah.
Cinema changes to try and clean up its moral image, and so you have this more like elevated thing.
Mm.
Like, these people don't sound like Ruby Keeler, who is like an early talkies person. They have a kind of a slightly posher holding. Yes.
It's sort of, I think what you were saying before about like, this is an accent that like denotes the cinema or it denotes the theatre is really interesting, because I think whether we think about that consciously or not when we're watching old films or seeing like an old play recording or something like that, you subconsciously are taking that on board, because it does feel like that only happens in this space. And it's,
totally.
It's a strange phenomenon. It kind of takes it out of reality a little bit.
Yeah, so I think like one of the things that makes this go out the window is this move towards like kitchen sink realism that you get, where people are like, I don't want films to be like a show that is like made differently. I want it to be like a window into life.
Mm.
And so they're like, well, the people in the movie can't go
talk in this funny voice anymore.
Yeah, they can't go, Hildy, you're a newspaper man.
I would have been a newspaper woman.
Yeah, they can't talk like that anymore. They have to talk like regular people, which is, you know,
it's fascinating.
It's a thing that happened. But so to kind of break down a few of the bits of how this works. Do we have time to
say a couple of things? We got a hot minute for it, I reckon.
So some of the it's basically some of the important differences that it has from standard American English. You don't pronounce Y's at the end of words. You throw in a schwa.
Schwa. Give us an example.
So instead of sorry, you don't have the E at the end. Uh-huh. You're sorry.
Sorry. Sorry to all my flatmates because I'm going to be walking around doing this all day. Give us another one.
And so you also, unlike most American dialects and things like Scottish, it's non-rhotic, so you don't pronounce R's at the end of words like mirror.
Mirror, yep.
And I don't think most New Zealanders do this either.
Big ups to South Island.
So you chuck a schwa in there as well. Mirror.
Mirror.
Ah. and you also, you don't tap slash flap, depending on who you're talking to, your T's in the middle of words. So probably when you're enunciating on the radio, you'll say water.
Water.
But if you were just talking really quickly to someone in the street, you might go, oh, yeah, give me a glass of water.
Bottle of water. Yeah.
Water.
Yeah.
Not No, you're not no. dropping the T.
Okay.
You're D-ing
water.
The T.
Water.
You're flapping
yeah, I see.
The, yeah.
Flapping
so it's water. But so you don't do that. That's very important.
Okay.
That's one of the most kind of like, you're really hitting T's and L's really hard.
Give us another example.
Water. tomorrow, Hildy. You'll be, yeah. And so all that has kind of to do with how you're like posturing yourself to do this. Your tongue's really far forward in your mouth. It's like up behind your teeth. So you can like, if you do the D, it's a little bit back further. It's a little bit lazy. This is everything's forward and it's quite aspirant. There's lots of and you're speaking quite up in your nose and your jaw is quite stiff. And so you end up having a face like a 1940s film star as well.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so
this is wild.
I mean, we could talk about this forever.
We really
but
could.
We can't. So.
You have picked us a good song though to end us on. What have you picked this morning, Amelia?
This is Tallulah Gosh with Bringing Up Baby, basically just talking about the plot of the film Bring Up Baby.
Thank you, Amelia.
My pleasure.
Look at me.
Bringing Up Baby by Tallulah Gosh.
Vinaigrette originally referred to small vinegar.
Word salad with Amelia Discreet on 95 BFM.